Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're answering your listener questions.
That's right. This is an Ask How to Money episode where we tackle and we answer listener questions. We've got five great ones today, including a listener. He's wondering what he should be doing with some personal loans that he took out in order to mine some Bitcoin. So that'll be interesting to tackle that question. Another listener, she is thinking about taking on a travel nursing gig in order to double her income. And we also have a question from a listener who is looking at some of the different tax breaks to consider, in particular when you are going to start your own business. So I'm looking forward to tackling those three plus a couple others today.
Yeah, and then one other wants to know the meaning of life, Matt. So you're going to get to that here in just a second. We're excited about,
you know, just the lighter questions that we have to, that we all wrestle with.
Should just take a minute or two. It won't take long. But quickly, I wanted to mention, and I think we talked about this on a Friday flight when the news was announced that people are going to be able to start renewing their passports online. That, I guess it was a few months ago that got released, but now it's live and you can officially renew your passport online. And we mentioned on a recent episode that we're going to be going to Scotland here in like season in May, which we're very excited about. Book the tickets and it's going to be a great trip.
Yeah, we're finally taking a trip abroad. This is the first time that we've Kate and I have been able to travel with you and Emily abroad on a fancy trip since before we had kids.
Yeah.
So basically it's been virtually an entire lifetime.
Right. And so both of our passports were expired.
Yes.
Yours, sadly, you cannot renew online.
Oh, mine was way expired. Like, I think mine expired 8 months after we got back from Ireland.
Was that? Okay.
Yeah.
So mine was still...
it was barely alive.
Mine still had some years on it, and it expired, I guess, in 2020. So was able to...
Yours was new.
I was able to take advantage of the online passport renewal process. It's kind of like... I've started the process a couple of weeks ago, so hopefully I'm going to get it back in time before
we were literally talking about this morning, because you checked yours, and so it's convenient, I guess. It's convenient and easy that you can renew.
It's so much more convenient.
But... not if it doesn't mean that your passport doesn't actually get renewed, because didn't you say like that it's not even showing that it's been being processed
yet? It says that it's supposed to tell me that it's being processed within 2 weeks, and it's been almost 2 weeks at this point. So I'm hoping that they get their act together and that it's not just easy, but that it's also effective. So I'll report back.
Yeah, but I would say that then the advice for folks would be to make sure that you're giving yourself plenty of time
in
order to take advantage of an online renewal like that.
Because they say it's going to be something like 9-ish weeks, but then they also, they might.
Well, Kate checked hers.
Some say it's going to be extra weeks for mailing
yes.
the thing.
So literally Kate checked hers to check on the status, and it was 8 to 11 weeks. And then they said, that's also not accounting for mailing it, for shipping it, which could add a few weeks. Yeah. Like that was the language that they used. Like potentially 3 weeks
in
the mail.
What takes that long to go in the mail? Honestly, like, dude, if you ship media mail, which is like the slowest way to ship something, it could still take.
It's like 10 days, right?
Shipping across the country is like 8 days. Maybe if we were shipping from Georgia to Alaska, it might take like 8 days. So to say multiple weeks to ship the passport seems ridiculous and absurd. And I'm hoping that the U.S. State Department gets my passport to me in time. I feel like I planned with enough advanced lead time, but yeah, we'll see. But hopefully the online passport renewal is a boon for lots of folks if you plan ahead in enough time.
Just
it costs the same amount of money, but you don't have to wait in lines. Like you had to go and wait in line this morning.
I literally went and did that this morning. So I went last week and showed up when they opened, and yeah, there was something like 50 people in line, and I was, you know, I came back and you're like, oh, that was quick. I was like, well, that's because I turned around and walked out because I didn't want to stick around for 5 hours. I mean, you do the math. I asked the guy at the front of the line, he's like, yeah, it's about 10 minutes, like for every person that goes. And I looked back and counted, you know, 50 folks. You do the math and you realize that folks are going to be there for multiple hours. But get there. Yeah, I got there a little bit, actually, before they even opened this morning, and I was in and out of there in like 15 minutes.
There you go. That's not bad.
That was
not bad.
Pretty good.
All right, well, let's move on, Matt. Let's mention the beer we're having. This one is Lindeman's Frambois.
Which I can't believe we haven't had on the show before.
How have we never had it?
I don't know.
It's a classic, raspberry lambic. Mm-hmm. We'll give our thoughts at the end of the episode. But we're going to take some listener questions here. And if you have a money question you want Matt and I to tackle, well, you can submit your own at howtomoney.com/ask. It's pretty easy. Just record a voice memo on your phone, send it our way, and hopefully we can take it on the next Ask HTM episode. But Matt, let's get to our first question for this one. And this question is about paying off a loan that our listener got because he was getting into Bitcoin mining.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Noah in Philadelphia. Big fan of the show. Thank you so much for all the information you all put out there. I have a question about using Roth IRA contributions to pay down a 16% interest rate personal loan. I'm 28 years old, and at the beginning of last year, I foolishly took out about $90,000 in 3 separate loans to start a Bitcoin mining business. As an aside, nobody should ever do that. It's turned out to be a terrible idea all around. Taking out debt for a risky investment is a bad idea, as these mining rigs have lost a lot of value already. Anyways, I've aggressively paid down one loan that is close to completion. Since it's so far down its amortization schedule, the interest rate is effectively zero. The second loan has $26,000 left on it and has a 16% interest rate. The third loan has $33,000 left and a 7.6% interest rate. I currently have $27,000 in Roth IRA contributions, which I could withdraw tax and penalty free. I'm wondering your guys' thoughts on withdrawing this money to pay off the 16% interest rate loan immediately. I want to be debt free as I was before making this stupid investment, but something about withdrawing from a retirement account, even tax and penalty free, feels like a bad idea. Thanks in advance.
All right, Noah, thank you for that question. And first off, don't beat yourself up too much here. You know, it sounds like you've learned a valuable lesson. That's the positive. That's the silver lining here. Bitcoin mining is not going to be your ticket to riches. But heaping shame on top of your head, like that's not going to get this debt paid off any faster. It won't help you to make better decisions moving forward. So yeah, it is important to come up with a plan. Definitely do that. Yes. But, you know, thrash yourself for that prior decision that you made. No way, man. We just last week we talked with Lindsay Brian Podvin, and she evoked Brene Brown, where she talks about the difference between shame as well as guilt. And so shame is I am dumb. But guilt is, oh, I made a dumb decision.
Yeah.
And I will say, no, that's totally the what I'm hearing in your voice. You're saying that like, I made a unwise investing choice. I do not recommend this. So we definitely want you to continue to focus on that, you know, the actual mistake, as opposed to internalizing it. Man, I just need to stop talking. I'm not turning into a counselor here. But all that to say, Noah, it sounds like you are approaching this mistake in a healthy way.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so let's talk about the actual mechanics of what Noah should do kind of in the aftermath of this mistake. Should he use...
That's what he's talking. That's what he came to How to Money for.
Yeah.
The mechanics, not the emotions of it.
He didn't come for you to hand him a Kleenex and have a good cry. But like, should he be using that Roth money to pay off this debt? Well, this is a tough one because normally we're not fans of tapping Roth funds until you reach retirement age, even though one of the benefits we talk about that Roth accounts have is that they're one of the most flexible retirement accounts in existence, right? And that they're not going to penalize you for pulling out at least contributions that you've made to that account early. So that is one check mark in favor of like, boom, you can do this without incurring a taxes and penalty. And we've talked about how a Roth IRA Matic can actually function like a backup to your emergency fund. So it provides just a second layer of defense, which is nice, and that's true. But in an ideal world, those funds would still never get tapped, right? Even though this account allows for that flexibility, we would still say, man, in 99% of cases, we still don't want you to touch the Roth, even those contributions that you have access to. But we're talking about a specific situation here where Noah has debt that's at a really, really high interest rate, right? Higher than the average rate of return that you'd typically see in the market over the years. Still, you can't ever get those dollars from prior years back into your Roth.
That's right.
And that's what makes this a tough question.
Yes, it is a tough one. Noah, the truth is, like, there's not necessarily a right answer here, right? Like, you could try to rearrange some of this debt. Like, that's another option, I guess, to consider. Like, we pretty much hate personal loans, but, you know, could you qualify for one in order to get the rate down into, like, say, just the single digits, right? Like 7 to 8%, perhaps. That would be way better than 16%. And that would also make keeping that money in the Roth IRA the more attractive solution if you're able to make that debt look a little less egregious. But also, a lot of this depends on your timeline here. You know, how long it's going to take you to pay off this debt if you don't tap that Roth. If the answer is, you know, maybe a year or two, if you are really dedicated, then I would likely, if it was me, I would probably just pay that debt off over time, really get after it. But if it's going to take you even longer, if you're talking about like 3-4+ years, then, you know, maybe emptying your Roth to get rid of a debt that bad, that actually might make some sense.
Yeah. It feels like we're hemming and hawing here a little bit, Matt. And mm-hmm. I think for good reason, because like you said, there is no slam dunk right answer here. And like, this is the definition, I would say, of being stuck between a rock and a hard place. Neither of these options is great. Pulling a giant chunk of change out of that retirement account. But keeping that debt on hand isn't ideal either. And so I think where I land, though, is that while I get the desire to be debt free, I just don't want Noah tapping future funds for himself for his future retirement in order to make it happen if he can develop an aggressive plan to get that debt paid off. And so those Roth funds are just so valuable when you allow them to grow and continue to grow for the future. And so, yeah, Noah, I think that's really the ticket here. If you can make that debt less bad, if you can accelerate payoff while keeping those funds in place, go that route. And if that means working extra to increase your income, so that you can funnel more and more money towards that nasty debt, go for it. But or like you said, Matt, if you can kind of shift the deck chairs on this debt and make it less bad than it currently is, that's another solution. But yeah, I think not like Bitcoin laser eyes, but like the laser focus that you need to have towards getting rid of this debt, that's important.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like Doe has already paid down $30,000, which is great. And so I'd say to continue to get after it, right? Like put those payments from that first loan that you've already eliminated towards the next one that's at 16%. And by doing that, it should take less than a year to eliminate that one based on the fact that you've already been able to pay that first one off, right? Like you've already been able to pay off $30,000 within that first year. So that additional amount plus how much you were able to dedicate towards that should get you even further faster. And plus, like, I do think there's this psychological advantage to not tapping those Roth contributions as well, right? Like you said, Joel, you might find yourself working harder in order to earn more to eliminate that debt. You might find yourself cutting back on your expenses because you're just sick of these personal loans and you want to get rid of them. So in this way,
like, listen, I'm not buying Beyonce tickets because I want to funnel that $400 straight to this debt.
Save that for the next tour.
Right.
So we want you to harness any frustration that you might have and just allow it to spur you on to eliminate that debt even more quickly. On one hand, you may have thought that, oh, this is just going to be a simple math problem, but it's more than just math because on one hand, you're thinking, well, the stock market might return more or less. But the fact is, we don't know what the stock market is going to return. And you might be thinking, but simply put, by paying this debt off, I will effectively be earning 16%. Here's the thing, and I'm not predicting this, but the stock market could also return that this year email us at the end of the year and maybe we'll talk about it then. We'll see where things land. But it also kind of seems like almost an easy way out if you were to pull that money out of your Roth IRA, as opposed, like, there's a sense of relief, I think, that would arrive by you doing that, as opposed to feeling the edge of that debt still being there. You don't want to dull that edge. Like, that's the part that you want to spur you on in order to make that progress even faster.
Yeah, and I think a really, probably a small point really on this is, once you tap retirement accounts for the first time, you're probably more likely to do it in the future, right? Yeah. You're kind of opening the floodgates.
It's another psychological element.
It's a psychological piece, right? And it's not that, again, Roths have that flexibility. It's one of the reasons that we love them, that you can get those contributions if need be, but we still don't want you to take them. And it's a weird thing that we like that, even though we don't want you to access it. But it's true, I think, if you take funds out of a retirement account once, my guess is, if you look at the statistics, people who've done it once are more likely to do it again. And so I just, want you to avoid that at all costs, Noah, if possible, and come up with a plan to get rid of this debt super quick, so that you can keep your Roth money where it is, but that you can also be rid of this debt in no time. And that's like best of both worlds scenario, right? But all right, Matt, we've got more questions to get to, including one from a teacher who says, is it okay for me to be 100% invested in stocks? We'll talk about that and more right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality, plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues, like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We are back taking listener questions, and before we get to that one from a teacher who is wondering how it is that he should be investing, let's hear from a nurse who is considering taking on a travel nursing gig.
Hey Matt and Joel, it's Mary Lynn from Boise, Idaho. I'm a 26-year-old registered nurse, and I'm currently in money year 6. I have a question about low interest rate debt paydown versus retirement savings. I'd like to be debt-free as soon as possible, and my plan is to become a travel nurse. I could stay as a local traveler, doubling my hourly rate, but I'd have to purchase my own health insurance, and I'd no longer have access to any type of work-sponsored retirement account. Another option is working with a travel nurse company. They'd pay for my medical benefits, and I would have access to a 401k after 6 months. However, I'd have to travel a lot farther away from my home and my community, but I could also make a lot more money. I'm already maxing out my Roth IRA, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on how I can continue to invest the minimum of 15% of my income towards retirement. You guys definitely need to come to Boise, a lot of biking and a huge brewery selection. So thanks so much for everything you guys do.
Oh, Matt, Boise sounds lovely.
Sure does.
I think that's why everybody's been moving there, right? So
yeah, that's why Kate and I considered moving there, even though we've never even been there before. We're just like, man, maybe we should be moving to Boise. Ever since I realized there's mountains there and it's not just potato farms,
yeah,
that's when I thought to myself, oh, this seems like a cool place.
No, I think it's a good town, and I've not been either. I've driven through parts of Idaho, but I haven't been to Boise, but it's on my list. I would love to check it out at some point. Mm-hmm. So Mary Lynn, thanks for the invite. And we definitely have to hit up the breweries if we went to. But let's just say congrats to Mary Lynn as well, because on being in Money Gear number 6 in her mid-20s.
Heck yeah.
That is, I don't know if I want to say a rare feat, but it's abnormal, right?
Have we set the bar too low? Should we make it harder to achieve the different money gears?
No, I don't think so. I think it's amazing that some people in their mid-20s are able to get to that point.
Absolutely.
And it's also just worth noting that it's not easy. And so for people to get there, it's like, boom, you deserve mad props. But really, that means that she doesn't have any high interest debt and that she's investing at least 15% of her pay, which is incredible. We want her to keep that up. We want all of our listeners really to enjoy that level of savings. But every dollar you invest now, Mary Lynn, it just means that you can relax a little bit more later, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's what our friend Doc G, he calls that front-loading the sacrifice. And it's something that we're fans of. And I'm certainly glad that I socked away more than I think most of my peers were socking away and investing early on, even when I was earning a piddly small amount during some of those years. Because life, it seems to get more expensive as you age. I'm not sure if that's inflation. I'm sure that has something to do with it, but it also has to do with having multiple kids.
Mm-hmm.
But finding ways to create that breathing room, you know, giving yourself more margin now, and honestly, just going through the practice of like just the discipline that comes with spending less money. All of those things, I think, will pay off handsomely down the road, and it'll just give future you even more flexibility, Mary Lynn.
Yeah, and so her question really goes beyond just a basic debt payoff and investing scenarios that we often get. We're talking more about whether she should opt for a position with higher pay and fewer benefits, which I think is kind of an interesting trade-off, an interesting question to consider. But that also comes with again, not just a math equation, it comes with significant lifestyle trade-offs. And so here's the thing, Mary Lynn, either way you go, you're going to be able to save for retirement. You're just going to have different account options depending on where you land.
Mm-hmm.
Simplicity is nice. It's nice to have like a 401k with a match where you can toss it in with every paycheck. But whether or not it's a 401k offered through your workplace or you're contributing to a taxable brokerage account on your own, you're still not limited to only just the Roth limits of $6,500 for this year. Even if that account isn't as beneficial from a tax standpoint, I just want you to know that if you don't have a workplace account at your disposal, there's still other ways for you to sock money away for your future, even if it's not coming from where you work.
Exactly. Yeah. But so let's get nerdy with it, right? Because then when it comes to which travel nursing job you should consider, one approach is to run the numbers. And so first, check and see what it's going to cost you to purchase health insurance on your own. You mentioned how that wouldn't be something that was offered with the first option, but with the second one, it would be. There are still some pretty generous subsidies from the federal government on some of those ACA plans. In this case, it might be one of these instances where you feel like it's because you haven't checked it out, it feels like something that's bigger than it actually is. It looms larger than in reality. But you might make out like a bandit taking the increased pay with one of those two other travel nursing companies and then getting your own coverage and paying for it yourself. That's something I found out with my first employer. I realized that even if I wasn't starting my own company and buying my own health insurance, it would have made sense for me to drop off the group plan because it was so stupidly expensive.
Yeah, especially for people who are young and in their 20s
and
single.
Healthy.
It was cheap back in the
day.
Oh
my gosh, yes. It was a slam. It would have been a slam dunk decision either way, but you are going to want to run those numbers first, of course. And you could also consider a non-traditional healthcare plan that isn't actually health insurance from one of the different medical sharing companies. as a nurse, maybe this might be more difficult for you to do because you are, you know, you're mentally invested into the healthcare industry and you're going to say, well, that's not health insurance. That's not, and it's true. It's not actually health insurance technically, but it functions in the same way. A lot of them do at least, but Joel and I, both of our families, that's what we've got, but those definitely come with trade-offs, which is why we don't promote them like crazy or anything like that.
Always happy to talk about them, but we're also not like, everybody should do this because it's not
everybody
the clear solution for a lot of people.
Do it. Exactly. But also, it makes sense to run the numbers and calculate the benefit of the 401k with that second company, because like that's just something else you want to consider, because if they have an insane match like some companies offer, so for instance Microsoft, they have a 50% match that is only limited by IRS contribution limits. That would be something that would be important to consider. Then, of course, you want to keep that in mind as you are trying to decide which of those two companies that you want to go with.
Yeah, so part of it is really kind of a math consideration. You need to say, well, how good are these benefits that are being offered? And how cheap will my premiums be through this employer and getting health insurance directly through them? And how much would I pay if I went directly out into the open market? You're going to want to like compare those figures, because that, and then how much is the actual salary difference too, right? That will like tell you a lot, but also so much of this comes down to what sort of life you want to lead, aside from just crunching the numbers.
So this time you're going to tap into the feelings side of the answers.
I have feelings too, Matt. Okay. Well, and of course
you've got enough feelings for the both of us.
I am the
normally I'm the nerdy math guy.
The more stoic for sure of the two of us. But this is something that we all have to consider, and this is like what we talked with Abby Davison earlier this year, end of last year, about kind of making massive life decisions that involve money and how to make those decisions well. And of course, travel nurses can earn quite a bit more than a nurse who's just going to stick around in Boise. But then Mary Lynn, she's got to figure out whether that travel is something she wants to do, whether, you know, is it worth doubling your pay for a year or two? Or do you want to get after it and just like massively increase your pursuit of financial independence? Or are there big reasons for you to stay put, like family, friends, community? Are those kind of things really important to you? And you've got a really close-knit one right there. And you're like, no, it's just not worth the extra income. I get that. Those are all the kinds of choices that we have to make. And you have to think about it through a holistic framework, right? That'll give you some clarity. And so actually, we're going to send you a copy of Abby and Maya's book that was Money and Love is what it's called.
Let's do it.
And so,
it's not just about love.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, I thought the title of the book actually didn't describe in some ways a lot of the frameworks that they cover, because there are a lot of decisions that aren't about love necessarily, but they're just the bigger life decisions that we make. And so money, it's obviously a big one of the bigger parts of a lot of these decisions, but we've got a lot of other factors that we need to consider too. So Mary Lynn, good luck in making this call, and we'll reach out to you and get your address so we can send you that book.
That's right.
And, yeah, I don't know, you might be in an airplane, so we'll figure out where we can send it.
But Joel, let's go ahead and hear our next listener question. This one actually comes from a fellow ATLian, and he's asking about how they should invest.
Hey, Joel and Matt, it's Jess and Kristen from down the road in Decatur, Georgia. My wife and I are both teachers, and this means we have one of the very few remaining professions that have a guaranteed pension in retirement, and good pensions at that. We are in our mid-40s and well into our career. 100% of our Roth IRA and brokerage investments are in stocks. We have approximately 10% in individual stocks and 90% in index funds. I keep this allocation with our pensions in mind. Instead of reallocating or buying bond funds, I view our pensions as our bonds or a safety net. I keep our investments heavy in stocks in order to maximize the growth that they can earn us over the next 15 to 20 years or so. What do y'all think about this? We would love to hear your take when time allows. Love the podcast, guys.
Matt, I think we can all admit that teachers don't get paid as much as they should.
That's true.
But they do have additional benefits, at least. Like Jess here, they have pensions in addition to summers off. Which,
what's a pension? What's a summer off? Yeah. What are either of those things?
I know. Those sound at least like nice perks of the profession that can often make up at least a little bit for that lack of salary. And I will say, I think the state of Georgia, we're dedicating a lot more resources to our teachers. So Jess should be getting a pay bump as well this year, which is great. But those secondary benefits just matter a whole lot. my father-in-law, he's a teacher, and he's able to use some of those weeks off, one, to rest and recuperate, but he also takes on some side gigs doing some other stuff, using the expertise that he's accrued in order to increase his income, which is great. So I think there's options for teachers to not just be stuck with the salary that the school district's offering.
Right.
But like, what should a pension like this mean for how teachers invest? Well, I think Jess is 100% on the right track here because of the dependable income, basically, that he's going to have from Social Security.
Oh, yeah.
And from this pension, I think he can afford to be more risky with his other investments.
Yeah, well, and you said risky. We're not talking about being so risky that you speculate with your investments, right? Like putting it all into just a rando crypto coin that just got minted, that just got created yesterday. But you can afford to have more stock exposure and less bond exposure if that's your jam. And we're definitely fans of folks specifically in the wealth building stage of their lives to have more stock exposure anyway. But you can do that with even more confidence if you have other financial instruments in place that provide a massive backstop if returns aren't as incredible as you hope. And a pension is exactly that, meaning that we think that you can and that you probably should prioritize owning stocks because if the proverbial ish hits the fan, you've got that pension money, you've got Social Security, and you can afford to wait things out as stocks and as the market recovers.
Yeah, especially if, so much it depends on how much is the pension going to be, how much is your Social Security going to be, but for a lot of teachers who teach for something like 30 years in a single district, their pension and Social Security is likely to be able to meet all their income needs in retirement. And so then you're talking about really your investing portfolio, hopefully, if you are still able to live a frugal existence, being kind of a massive cherry on top, right? And that might be the case here for Jess. But I think in another part of the equation, so much of this comes down to risk tolerance as well. It sounds like Jess doesn't mind this added risk, right? Because he's been able to de-risk in other ways. And it makes me think of a friend of the show, Morgan Housel. Matt, when he came on the podcast, he talked about paying off his home, which is not what you and I are choosing to do. But he said, I know it's not the right financial decision. I know it's not the smartest from like a dollars and cents standpoint, but he says, if I do this, one, it's going to help me sleep better at night, and two, it's going to make me feel way more comfortable having that stock portfolio that's 100%, right? And so, yeah, he was essentially trading one risk for another, right? Not having a mortgage payment can allow that kind of flexibility. And there are just all sorts of ways that we can choose to de-risk in one area and then take on more risk in another. And that's kind of what Jess is doing here by having two reliable sources of monthly income with the pension and Social Security. He's able to de-risk in that area and then kind of take more risk in another.
Yeah, another way you can de-risk is just by having a thicker financial cushion in place, right? We're just talking about having more money set aside in an emergency fund. But it also, it comes down to the kind of flexibility that you have when it comes to your expenses as well, because I think as some folks enter their, as they get closer to retirement years, they might think, you know, we were talking about our trip to Scotland. There might be some folks who are thinking, well, every single year I'm going to take 4 international trips. Like, I must do that. Whereas somebody else might say, you know what, that'd be nice,
yeah,
but I would be perfectly content living on a quarter of what we're forecasting for us to live on, right? And yeah. So if you have the ability to be flexible, for there to be some give and take, and if you will be able to not only survive, but just to live a pretty dang happy life, that's another way that you are able to reduce the amount of risk in your life by not altering much now on the front end. You can still continue to invest aggressively, but your life may not look exactly like you're planning for it to look.
Yeah, and that's why so many answers to questions like this, it's hard to get. A lot of the questions that we get, we try to give the principles instead of like, here's exactly what you should do in your situation.
Yeah, yep.
Because we don't know the full extent to Jess's situation. Let's say he also has a 15-year mortgage on his home and it's going to be paid off by that time. That gives him an even greater reason to invest more in stocks. He has more risk that he can take on. So yeah, what's happening when it comes to your risk level in other areas of your life? Not like, are you jumping out of airplanes and going skydiving? That's not what I'm talking about. But like, where are you taking on risk in your financial life and where are you de-risking? Those are important questions.
And what it is that you're comfortable with.
Right.
Right. Because like, simultaneously, he could have just taken out a brand new 30-year mortgage on a pretty expensive house at a not great rate, historically speaking,
and
over the past
like
10 years.
A brand new 4Runner that cost $50,000 or something, you know?
But that being said, he might feel completely comfortable with that personally, like himself. And so I think that's important to there's a lot of factors here to consider, but ultimately it does come down to how you feel as an individual with the risk that you've taken on. And actually, since, you know, we're talking about, you know, we're talking about bonds here, we're talking about taking risk, it might be worth just touching on why some folks invest in bonds to begin with. And that's because of what's known as sequence of returns risk. And this risk refers to the fact that the withdrawals from your portfolio when the market is down, how those can have an outsized negative impact on your overall rate of return. And conventional wisdom says that stocks and bonds have an inverse relationship. So imagine you're off in retirement, stocks are down. Well, then theoretically, bonds are up. And so what that means is you sell those bonds rather than your stocks that are in the gutter.
Yeah.
That's how you pay the bills. That's
2022 was an anomaly on that front, by the way.
Yes, it was, which is also why it's not a rule per se, but just kind of like, oh, yeah, conventional wisdom.
Rule of thumb.
Yeah, exactly. But again, Jess, you know, you've got your pension and that's going to be your ticket to taking more risk within your Roth, within your brokerage accounts. One other thing I wanted to mention real quick, too. You mentioned how you've got 10% of your portfolio invested in what it sounded like was single stocks, which isn't what we do personally. It's definitely not a huge deal. It's not like the end of the world that you are slightly more invested in individual companies as opposed to widely diversified indexes. But for other folks out there, that might be something you want to keep in check. I think, and maybe it's because...
Again, you can be a little riskier, I guess, if you've got your other bases taken
care of. Exactly. But, and I was thinking too, like maybe Jess would say, well, it's because they've done so well. I started out at 5%, but he's just letting his winners run. But even still, it's just something worth noting. We, you know, if you do want to invest in individual stocks, we would typically recommend to invest no more than 5% of your overall portfolio.
No doubt. And I think risk is still just, it's one of my favorite topics in personal finance because there's so many things you can discuss on that front. It makes me think of our conversation with Alison Schreger, who's an economist who writes about risk. And she wrote that book, An Economist Walks Into a Brothel, mm-hmm. all sorts of her thoughts on risk. And I don't remember the episode number, but we'll link to that one in the show notes. Just a fun conversation about risk, how it impacts us and how we should think about it. Because sometimes the things we think are not risky are actually the riskiest things that we can do. Specifically like keeping money in all in cash and not investing. That's the worst thing we can do because of the known risk of inflation. But Jess, hopefully that answer helps. And it sounds like you're mentally thinking in the right manner. And for you, if it fits your risk tolerance, we think that choice makes sense. But all right, Matt, we've got more questions to get to, including one about tax breaks, how to find out which ones you qualify for as you start a new business. We'll get to that and more right after this. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, let's get back to those listener questions, man. It is now time for the fourth of the five questions. Let's hear from a listener who is interested in hearing our thoughts on using acorns to get started investing.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Heidi from Hurricane, Utah. I'm about 20 minutes south of Zion National Park. And I started an account with acorns. I'm new to investing, and I'm almost 40 this year, so I want to get my stuff together. I love how easy it is and how in control I am on the app. And so I just wanted to get a start, even though I'm late in the game. And so I'm curious to know your thoughts of where I should be going first, and if I should continue with acorns while going another route as well. I also am curious to know where I should be putting my kids' money. Right now I'm putting a little bit of savings each week into their accounts, and I just want to set them up for success earlier in life. So if I could get some direction and guidance on that as well, I'd appreciate it. Thanks for all your help.
Ooh, man, I'm jealous. That close to Zion National Park?
That's one of the premier national parks here in our country.
Yeah, I've been once. It was delightful, but I've
been once as well.
I want to go back. I want to take the kids. So, and this would be the year because we've got fourth graders and we get it for free.
Exactly. Fourth graders get it for free. Kate and I, we've actually, so it's a really affordable flight to get from Atlanta to Las Vegas, which I think would be where you would fly in. So Kate and I have kind of, we batted that idea around a little
bit. There you go.
Maybe for some spring break action.
All right, but that sounds smart.
Also, the thought of hiking Canyon where with kids in particular, a three-year-old, it's a little, doesn't quite sound like vacation.
Yeah, but there might be some easier hikes that he could handle. I don't know,
we'll see.
But let's get to the heart of Heidi's question here about investing in acorns. Is that a good place to do it? And well, I would say this, that there are a lot of worse places you could be investing, and that's for sure. And so yeah, you said you love how easy it is, how, you know, in control you feel, and I totally get it. I think I would say if this is working well for you, I hate to tell you to switch things up, but part of the reason to switch things up or to at least consider doing it is just because of the fees, right, that Acorns charges. And they're not nearly as bad as you could get in other places, but we just really hate fees. And so I think the fees at Acorns, they kind of seem small. $3 a month, that's tiny, right? And you're right, it's not massive, but you could do better. And whether or not that price is reasonable, honestly, it depends on how much money you've got invested, because if your account balance is low, that seemingly low fee is actually quite bad when compared to the tiny fees that our favorite low-cost brokerage firms charge. And so $3 taken out of a $500 balance each month is very, very different than $3 taken out of something like a $300,000 balance. So how much money you have invested points to whether or not that Acorns fee is like bad or actually really not bad.
Doable, at least. It's important to note that Acorns, they also have they've got their invest option, but then they also have a later option, and that allows you to invest within an IRA, and that's with either a traditional or a Roth IRA. And we want your dollars going into that Roth option, of course, but I do think you're right. You know, while Acorns, like, it's a solid company, they've helped a lot of folks save well for their future, their more recent investing options just aren't our favorite, largely because of the fee structure, especially for folks who are just getting started. So it can be a bummer for someone who's getting on the right track, you know, on the right financial track, to see their balance grow a whole lot less because of that monthly fee. And when some of the others are out there charging essentially nothing, like Fidelity with its zero funds, or even Vanguard, they don't have fees associated with having accounts with them. Those are our favorites. We would prefer for you to go in that direction. And that's the other thing too, like with those accounts, you can still set up automatic deposits into your investment accounts from your checking account. And so maybe it's that emotional hurdle that comes with, like, you don't have to have an entire investing plan put together. And maybe that's what is so appealing about Acorns, is that it happens in these really small little bite-sized chunks. Well, you can do the exact same thing with Fidelity or Vanguard. Just go in there, set up, like even just like $30 a month, like signing up for a $30 a month subscription service. Most folks wouldn't bat an eyelash at that. And so if you can take that similar approach where you're saying to yourself, you know what, it's not that big of a deal. Let's just get the ball rolling. Let's get these deposits happening automatically. And I think by doing that, you could easily match whatever that you were able to sock away with Acorns without paying that $3 a month fee.
Yeah, I think one maybe happy medium option too would be to go with a robo-advisor like Betterment, where the fees are a little bit higher, but it also has some of the bells and whistles that somebody like Acorns offers. And yeah, so it's at least worth looking into. I think if the interface actually gets you excited and helps you think about investing and socking away more of your money for your future, I think that there's something to be said about that, the psychological component of that.
Yet again, we're coming back to how someone feels about something versus what the actual numbers show when you crunch it. Well, and we're not discounting how folks feel about things. That is important.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is, yeah, you feel good about what you're wearing, you're more likely to go out there on the dance floor and get crazy, right? So we all have like these psychological components to how we handle our finances. And that's one of the things actually that, talking about Betterment, one of the better features they have is kind of that hand-holding, the psychological, the encouragement that they offer, I think, to their users. So yeah, you pay a little bit more, but I think it actually encourages those investors to stay the course and to sock more of their money away for the future, which is good. But let's talk about Heidi's kind of last question about saving up for her kids. And I think that desire, Heidi, to set your kids up for success is admirable. But we want to make sure that you've built yourself a decent runway first. Like, don't start investing for your child's future until you've made substantial progress saving for your own retirement. And then, you know, the question is, where should you put money for your kids once you've done that? Well, so much depends on your goals and how much, you know, you've got to set aside and then how old they are. We like 529 accounts a lot, whereas we didn't used to recommend those nearly as much. But thanks to a recent law change, they're more flexible. And that money, if it doesn't get spent for college, can now be socked into a Roth account for them later on. But a high interest savings account is another good option. And that sounds really basic, but I would say this can help you put money in their hands, which is key to learning how to handle money well. And you know, don't think you have to save up thousands of dollars for them, but little bits of money set aside and then talking with them about saving, spending, and investing, and you know, discussing what you're learning as well.
Yes.
As you continue to make these investing choices are going to go a long way towards helping them become financially savvy as they grow up.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's way less about setting aside more money, and it's more about building up the confidence and them learning lessons and then being able to essentially like partake in the financial knowledge that you are now learning, right? Like, I think it's so cool.
They're going to see the energy that Heidi has
because
she's a student herself right now.
Yes, and I think that is contagious. But your kids, Heidi, I think they're going to see you as like, oh, mom's an investor. Well, shoot, I better be an investor as well. Oh, mom's like setting aside this much money every single month. And when it comes to them earning their own money, I think that will easily be able to translate into them also doing the same thing. And not to mention, if you are getting started here, I think you can avoid some of the, I guess maybe awkwardness, but maybe some of the entitlement that comes with, like if you've been saving for, you know, multiple decades and you've got a decent chunk set aside. Generally speaking, I'm not sure how healthy it is for kids to know that dollar amount, right? Yeah. But if you are just getting started with, whether it be your Acorns account or Betterment account, or whether you go ahead and open a Roth IRA for free with Fidelity, for them to be able to see those small amounts that you're socking away into there, like you can show them the interface and show them the growth, show them that, oh, we didn't do this past summer because I was really trying to save and invest more for my future. And for them to be able to see that, they get a peek behind the curtain without worrying about any of the, you know, knock-on effects of them knowing that there's like this massive amount of money sitting there.
Yeah, I think it's more powerful to talk to them about money. And then you do want to make sure they have money in their hands somehow, whether it's
sure.
you're working
yeah,
for it
yeah.
or you're putting it in a savings account for them. Because I think that also having money that they get to make choices with is powerful, and they get to make mistakes under your roof as opposed to when they're you know, often in college or often, you know, living by themselves.
Totally. But yeah, I think it's more about the practice of handling the money as opposed to socking up a big stash of money that they never touch.
Agreed. And there's a lot of people, especially in the financial independence movement, that are they talk about generational wealth. And so they are saving up massive amounts for their kids. We don't necessarily align 100% with that. We're not against saving money up for your kids, but it's also, do it within reason.
And still
be
careful.
The more important part is to teach them the lessons to make sure that they're going to be investing for their own future when they come of age. So, all right, Matt, let's get to our last question for this episode. This one is about starting a new business and wanting to make sure you do it the right way.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Derek calling in from Minneapolis. I kind of have a two-part question here for you. First off, my wife graduated as a marriage and family therapist in May of 22, and we opened up an LLC for her at that time. She operates partly going into an office space that she rents, and then the other kind of half the time, she's at home doing telehealth, where she just kind of takes over the top part of our home. I was just doing some quick Googling and seeing things like we can write off miles and square footage and internet electricity as part of her business. I was just wondering, what advice do you have as tax season is coming up? What are maybe other benefits or tax write-offs that I should be thinking about, or how do we go about kind of calculating that? The second part to my question was, we've always used just Free Tax USA. It's like $6 or $7, so pretty cheap. And we've always had pretty straightforward taxes. But with the LLC, I was wondering if that really changes things, if you would suggest going in and talking to an expert as opposed to just trying to use a pretty cookie cutter system like Free Tax USA. For what it's worth, we also had the birth of our first daughter in February of last year. So just wondering if maybe that was something else to consider too, between seeing an expert or just using an online program. Appreciate you guys taking the time and answering my questions.
Derek, congrats on all the milestones, man. New business, new kiddo, like a lot of cool stuff happening in your life. By the way, you're reaching out to me for advice, or to us for advice, but I might have to reach out to you later because my wife is going down that same path to become a marriage and family therapist. So yeah, if we get to that graduation date and she's like, what do I do now? I'll be like, I can reach out to Derek and he'll tell me what to do.
You scratch our back, Derek, we'll scratch yours.
Exactly.
But let's talk taxes. Sounds like you have done your homework, Derek, so that's good. There are going to be deductions that your wife is now going to qualify for now as a small business owner that you didn't get to qualify for before, including that home office and, of course, writing off some of those utility bills too. But, of course, there's going to be some nuance to those rules. So, for instance, in order to write off that home office, it can't be used for anything else other than work. It can't double as, all right, well, you know, according to the letter of the law, that can't be like the playroom for the baby or I don't know, whatever else that you happen to have been using that room for before she started practicing. And also you can't deduct more than 300 square feet as you are coming up with the essentially like the square footage ratio as you are looking to make deductions. And similarly, when it comes to utilities or your home internet, you're only supposed to deduct the amount that's used for specifically for work as well. And so it's a really squirrely thing here to try and actually figure out, like, how do you calculate the data usage that your wife is using for the business versus what it is that you are using while on Wi-Fi and you're sitting there on your phone after you put the baby down.
But we know what you're binging, Derek. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, if your internet bill is $50 a month and, you know, the business, it might be plausible that the business would use half of the bill.
But you got to love the complexity of the tax code, Matt, right? And just how the IRS doesn't really make it easy for us as small business owners or as individuals to get our taxes right. Because, like, let's say another thing, meals are another one of these things that you can, and your wife now can take deductions for. She can deduct 50% of meals that were done with a business purpose. And so, work-related travel, that's deductible too. Office furniture and supplies, there are lots of things now that qualify as deductions. Just remember too, that deductions, they don't mean that you got that item for free. They just mean that you're not taxed on that item. So I think that's one thing people get confused sometimes. Like, oh, great, I'm going to buy all this stuff so I can deduct it. And it's like, well, you know, if you could have avoided buying that stuff, you still come out ahead.
It's on the business. Yes. It's like, that doesn't mean it's free. Like, there's a scene from Schitt's Creek where there's some confusion around what it means that something is on the business.
Yes. Yep. So I think that's, important to mention. So don't just go out there and buy all new office supplies at top dollar just because it's on the business, right? Basically, it's complicated, which sucks. And so because of that, I'd say yes, you're in a different tax realm now with this small business having been launched, and it's probably in your best interest to hire a tax pro. Ask a few friends who own their own business who they use, maybe interview a few folks, test them out. But this is likely going to save time, which could be spent earning more and building the business, in addition to errant tax dollars that you might have otherwise paid. This is one of those things that we've consistently said for years now on the podcast, that hiring someone to help you out with taxes makes sense. It makes more sense to hire someone most of the time to help you do taxes than it does hiring a financial advisor.
Totally. Yeah. And you're not going to get a tax pro because you now have a baby. That's easy to do. You just claim someone as a dependent, you write their name, you got the social security. That doesn't really complicate things at all, but the business side of things definitely does.
Yeah. And you don't want to be missing out on some of those deductions that you would have qualified for just because you didn't do enough research.
Exactly.
Pay the person who does it all day, every day.
And the laws are constantly changing.
Who
as
knows
well.
It like the back of their hand.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
But they really don't have to be terribly expensive as well. So my guess is that depending on where you are, like you might be able to find somebody pretty great in like the $300 to $400-ish range if, you know, they're preparing your personal and small business taxes. You know, this is based on what the average person is paying for tax guidance. But this is a situation where you're likely being cheap instead of being frugal were you to not hire a tax pro because of that expertise that they're going to be able to provide. That could easily more than cover what you're going to end up paying them for their services. But I like what you said as well, Joel, about just asking around, in particular, asking someone who is in the same industry as you. So for instance, a friend of mine was a tax preparer about 10-15 years ago, and they found themselves attracting a certain kind of client, specifically truck drivers. They had a couple truck driver clients, and they did such a great job. It was something like they had them track their mileage as opposed to the actual expenses, because that came out better for them because of that. But what that meant was all those guys were like, you've got to hire these folks. They're saving me so much money. But when you have somebody within a specific, who is very familiar with a specific industry, a specific field, they know how it is that they can not work the, not like you're not cooking the books, but they know the specific deductions that you are not only allowed to take, but that's the other thing too. Just because there's a deduction that the IRS allows, that doesn't necessarily mean that they like it when you take that, right?
You might be throwing up red flags that
exactly
could make it more likely that you're going to be audited.
Especially given that this sounds like this is the first year that she's been in business. And so it would be very easy to take a bunch of, to keep up with a bunch of expenses, to take a bunch of deductions to where she actually has a loss this year. But a tax professional who has experience representing their clients like within during an audit, they're going to know the kind of things to look out for. It's highly unlikely that you're going to get audited, but it is still very nice to have somebody who has your back and who is experienced.
Yeah, and they might say, yes, you are eligible for that, to be able to take that deduction, but actually, it's not wisest to do so.
We're only going to take 70% of that.
Or hey, actually, if you hold off on this purchase until next year, that'll give you a much bigger tax deduction. There are all sorts of things like that that an expert can walk you through, and it might make more sense than just kind of trying to go the DIY route.
Totally.
And one more last thing worth mentioning here is now that your wife runs her own business, she's going to have more retirement account options open to her, which would allow her to sock away a whole bunch of money for retirement each and every year. We do the solo 401k here at How to Money.
It's the best.
It's pretty great. The SEP IRA is another great account worth considering. It's pretty similar, but they can be a little confusing because you can contribute both as the employer and as the employee, but she could contribute up to $66,000 towards a solo 401k this year. I know it's unlikely that you're just hoping to like make somewhere in that ballpark. I'm sure your first year in business, that would be wonderful, but what a goal to shoot for, to know that eventually with these accounts, you really can put away a ton of money in any single given year for your future.
That's right. But Derek, best of luck to you and your new baby, this new business. A lot of exciting things going on in your life, and hopefully we've pointed you in the right direction. Joel, let's get back to the beer, dude. You and I enjoyed a Lindeman's Frambois. This is a raspberry lambic beer. What were your thoughts?
Oh, man. This is truly one of my favorite styles. I will say, not my favorite representation of the style, because I like the real funky ones.
Because this one is less funky and way more sweet.
Yes. So this is probably more in your realm.
It's almost, I think it's too sweet for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like it's got so much sugar going on. Like it reminds me of some, like a one of those plastic jugs of juice that you buy at like Kroger at the grocery store.
This so tastes,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, this tastes almost like grape juice, but it's like raspberry juice for sure. It's definitely super sweet, but it's, I would say for people who are like, I think I might like fruity beers and I like sweet stuff, and I like grape juice or whatever. Like the Lindeman's,
it's so sweet.
The Lindeman's fruited beers really are probably a really good first stepping stone for a lot of people.
Yep, probably.
And
so.
It's still good. Like I still like it.
Still enjoyable.
But it's just, man, when you know what these kind of beers can be.
When you've had the world, I mean, literally, we've had some of the, not to brag or anything, but I mean, we really have had some of the best beers within this category.
From
some
like Cantillon.
Best examples.
And Driefontein. Uh-huh. Like those are just absolute monsters.
They're
but this
world class.
This one is solid.
This is the kind that I feel like my kids could drink this and they wouldn't know it's beer.
Completely.
They'd be like, oh, this is so good. And I'm like, no, stop, don't drink that. But regardless, it is still very fun to drink any kind of beer here while we record an episode. Yeah. And also, if you are in the market for a new credit card, we would recommend for you to head over to howtomoney.com/creditcards. There we've got a fantastic tool that allows you to filter the results based on the different kinds of rewards, the different types of miles, the different kinds of bonuses that you can earn. It is extremely easy to use, and we would recommend for you to check it out. We'll make sure to have show notes up on the website as well for this episode. But Joel, that is going to be it for this one, man. Until next time.
Best friends out.
And best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.